This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
And now that heart is beating fast, and that's the rhythm I can dance to. I'm mighty glad I've got a chance to that one big heart that's beating fast. Tomorrow morning, let it rain. Tomorrow morning, let it pour. Tonight we're in the groove together. Ain't gonna worry about stormy weather. Gonna kick old trouble out the door. Beat out old trouble and drum. Beat out old trouble and drum. Beat out old trouble on the drum and kick old trouble out the door. Beat me that rhythm on the drum. Beat me that rhythm on the drum. Beat me that rhythm on the drum and kick old trouble out the door.
Back
kick
Radio
him out the door. Kick him out the
Radio
door.
Greens.
Kick him out the door. Kick him out the door.
Every week we have a special guest, but sometimes we have guests that are more special than others. Before we introduce her, we'll talk to my co-host.
What?
Well, producer. No, producer.
You
you're a producer.
Up there, Joe.
Yeah,
I'm
producer.
I'm not the co-host.
Henrietta's somewhere up country. She rang in and couldn't make it. So, Henrietta, I hope you're not listening. Mm. Now, what are you doing for the 50th anniversary party, Joe?
Oh, at the moment, I'm just going to be going there. But
now, hang on. You're the music coordinator. You coordinate 45 music programs. Are you going to have a stall, a music stall?
I said at the moment.
At the moment.
There's discussions. There'll be probably some special things happening before, actually.
Well,
for
it's the 4th of July. Just, that's around the corner.
Yeah, yes. But also during the month of June, we have our radiothon here at 3CR. Mm. We're probably going to do some archival recordings, put them to air, which some people have already been doing, some little bits and pieces.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that boring introduction.
Of course. I'm not going to, excite you in 30 seconds, Joe. It's your job.
I don't
job.
Think you'd excite me in 56 minutes, Joe, knowing personal. I've known you for over a quarter of a century,
That's
and
it.
I'm still waiting.
That's it. I'm censored. Goodbye.
Now, our special guest is, I'm always terrible with names, Suad Rezek.
Correct. Correct.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, when I mentioned to Suad that it was going to be 56 minutes she, with no music and no community announcements, she kind of crumbled.
I know.
Look, I'm sure you've had a very interesting life.
I did.
And I'm sure we'll need another program to finish it off.
True.
Yeah. What year were you born? You don't have to tell us exactly. You can tell us the 80s, the 90s.
The 80s, yes.
The 80s, early or late?
Middle.
Well, there you go.
Middle, yes, yeah. Exactly.
And where were you born?
In Sudan.
Sudan.
Yes.
That's a big place. Where in Sudan?
Khartoum.
Khartoum. That's also a big place.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
It's three separate cities, isn't it?
Yes. Khartoum, Bahri, and another one.
Another one. And which one were you born in?
In the Exat Khartoum, yes. There is Omdurman as well, but I was born in the Exat Khartoum.
A little bit like the CBD of Melbourne, Carlton, Fitzroy. You were born in the CBD of Khartoum.
It's in the middle, yes.
Were you far from the airport?
No, actually not.
No.
Yeah, very close. Mm. If I can remember. Yeah, very close.
Yeah, right. And are your parents still with us?
My father passed away many, many years ago when I was still young. But my mom, yes, she's still young.
And what was your father's name?
Al-Tayyip.
Right, and what and. Was he born in Khartoum or did his family?
Yes, he was.
So his family was.
Yes, everybody's there. Yeah, his mom, his dad,
And how old was he when he died? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember because it was very young.
And how young were you?
I will say probably, I can't remember exactly, but I would say probably maybe five.
Five?
Yeah.
Mm, that would have been very difficult for your mother.
It was.
How many children did she have at that stage?
We were five.
Five?
Five, yes.
So he would have been the major breadwinner. He's the one who worked?
Absolutely, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And obviously he died relatively young.
Yes, he was very young, yeah.
Mm. So yeah. What's your mother's name?
Habiba.
And she in Australia or Kat?
No, she's still back home.
Back home,
she's
where?
In Sudan, yes.
She's gone back to Khartoum, has she?
Yeah, she's back now.
Back now.
So it was the war, so they left. But yeah. Now because it's getting better, so she's back. You know, they don't want to leave their homes. And
no.
As soon as things start getting better, yeah. She's
well, the thing is, a lot of the homes in Khartoum were destroyed.
Absolutely, yeah.
I've seen pictures of what's occurred. Yeah. Yeah. Many people died during the occupation from the Rapid Defence Forces, whatever they're called?
Yeah.
I remember I was at a, I think an Eid thing in the city, and that's the night that they launched their rebellion.
It was an Eid, yes.
And I was with all these other Sudanese men, mainly from Sudan, not from South Sudan, and they were all just shocked.
We were all shocked. Mm. And we thought, me personally, I thought, oh, it's probably just going to be like days or, you know, just like maybe a week or something. And it just went for, I think, probably nearly 3 years, two years and a half, something like that. Yeah, it went for a long time.
So this, it's not really a civil war, is it? It was more a faction.
Exactly.
Yeah, because the Janjaweed was created by the government.
By the government, yeah.
And then they got... thought they were the government.
Yes. Yes, that's what they thought,
And I understand they've been supported by Chad and the United Arab Emirates to a large degree.
That's what everybody is saying,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
However, I personally haven't seen anything.
No evidence.
But people do see things and they talk. And from Emirates we haven't heard, you know, like they say no or, you know.
Yeah.
So, maybe.
So... what, most of the country is pacified now, except for Darfur, or there are other pockets where there are...
There's still pockets, most of it, yeah.
Most of it.
Yeah.
So when was the last time you were in Sudan?
I went back 2019, I was there.
You were there. Was there any sign of things to come?
No. We actually, me and my kids, we stayed there for, I think, 2.5 months.
Right.
And it was lovely. Mm. You know, it's always lovely to go back, and it was just normal.
Normal.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You said you've had 4 brothers and sisters, is that right?
Yeah, so including me. So we are two girls and 3 boys.
And are they all alive? Or?
No, we actually lost 2.
2?
Yeah, we lost 2.
What, from?
One was just during the war, probably like for about 1 year now.
Right.
He passed away. And was he
a casualty in the war or
no. It has nothing to do with the war.
War.
Yes,
right,
he was just sick.
Mm.
And the other one was probably like maybe 5, 6 years ago.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
So are you the youngest?
No, actually.
No.
Yeah. You know how, you know, all these people have kids like one after another.
Yes. So. Well, I wouldn't know that. I've never had kids one after the other. Usually women have kids, but that's a different story.
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest?
Yeah, I'm the oldest, but they all like 1 year apart. Like,
so your mum, when she became a widow, she had, what, 5 children under 6?
So she was pregnant with the fifth one. Yes,
fifth one.
She was pregnant with the fifth one, yeah.
So how did she survive? Was there any government support?
No.
Nothing.
We don't. So the way it actually went for us, which is actually goes for a lot of people in Sudan, that the grandparent will look after a child. So I've been given to my grandparent, and my other sister's being given to the other grandparent.
Right.
And because my other siblings were really young, so they were actually with my mom.
Right.
So,
So two went to grandparents.
Yes.
So was it your mother's?
No, from the father's side.
Father's side. And what was that like?
It was good. However, like, you know, you will have the same siblings growing in a different environment.
Yes, yes.
And later on will create different personalities.
Yes.
Which is later on you will see in the way you deal with your siblings.
Right.
And when we grew up and we came together, but we realized that everybody has their own different personality from the others. So I think that's was a bit of a problem, but it was good. That was the only choice. Just, that I think yeah.
And so obviously what are you, let's have your brother's names just for the record, just to honour them. You know.
Yes. So my sister, her name is Salwa.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother that passed away, his name is El Hadi. And we have Amin and we have Muhammad.
Right. Yeah. And you.
And me. And me, Saad.
Right. So yeah. Did you go to school in Khartoum?
I did. Not as much, but I did.
So how many years did you spend at school in Khartoum?
I went probably for all my primary school.
Right.
I was there, I was in Khartoum. Mm-hmm. But after that, I left.
You left. Let's go back to the primary school. What was it like? Was at that stage was it the Muslim fundamentalists, that Muslim Brotherhood, was it, or the fundamentalists that taken over in Khartoum?
I think it was the military,
yeah, but they used religion as an excuse. The military, exactly. They used religion, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what was it like going to school?
I was very smart.
Very good. Well, that's why you're here, all right?
I was. If I remember now, it was... Mm-hmm. Great years, you know, you're still young, and we did, for me, as, you know, a young girl lost a father and growing up with the grandmother and an uncle, it was a bit different, you know, but I had good years with difficulties, but
I'm going to ask you some boring questions. I always wanted to know this. Did you wear a uniform in primary school?
We did.
Tell us about the uniform.
Oh, my God. Well, it was white and not like the...
White?
Yes. And, I hated it.
But it's hot and it's this dust.
Yes. Yeah. And it wasn't the white, like the very nice white.
Yes.
It was white, but it's like more as like...
grey, brown.
Grey, like brownish.
Yeah, we call it dirty white. Exactly. Dirty white.
And the material was a bit hard. It was so hot.
Yes.
It was so hot.
Yeah.
But yes, we did.
Was Arabic your primary language?
Yes, it was Arabic, yes.
You've got no other language. Oh, I mean, apart from English. I mean, when you're in Sudan, there was no, you didn't have a tribal language?
No, it was all Arabic, yes.
All Arabic. Exactly. And obviously the school was in Arabic.
Yes, everything, yeah.
So what happened at the end of primary school? You said you... You left. What happened?
I did. Well,
how
I
was, old were you?
very young, like really very young.
Yeah.
But
what? 12?
Probably a bit. Yeah, a bit older.
13. All right. Okay.
Yeah. But I always had the idea of. I went through a lot that time.
Yes.
And a lot of things happened, so it just came into my mind. I just want to leave.
Right.
At that time, I didn't know where.
Right.
But the first thing was in my mind: I want to go to Egypt.
Right.
But wasn't like going somewhere else. But it was in my mind: I just need to leave, because from my like teenage years was a bit hard. And like 10, 11, 12, it was a lot of things happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I just got it in my mind: I have to leave. I have to leave, and I managed.
It was really
really hard, but I managed.
How did you? Can you tell us how you got to Egypt?
Oh, wow!
Did you get your bus?
No, we took the.
Who's we?
Train. To Halfa.
Right. Yes.
And from there, I had a major trouble in there because I was so young.
Yes. Well, they wouldn't let you cross the border.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, did you have a passport?
Yes.
You did.
I did. Yeah. However. Yes.
Just what, you were by yourself?
No.
You were accompanied by an adult.
Yes. But because my mom from South Sudan.
Yes.
And when people look at me, they won't believe that, because more like the north and my father's side. And
yes.
I did not grow there as much. So
yours was a mixed marriage.
Yeah. Yes.
No, it's like...
So it's a bit hard for people to recognize me with someone from the South Sudan, and they believe that, well, my mom is there. Like, no.
No.
Yes, yeah, so that's created like a huge problem for
so
me.
So how long were you stuck at the border for?
For a week. But I stuck there for a week.
Finally you got across.
Yes, by myself.
By yourself?
Yes.
At 13?
By myself.
And you had no relatives in Egypt?
Well, I did. I did. But the person that came with me, I just said to him, go.
Right.
Because there was a problem. Yes. And I'm going to stay. But in my mind, I'm leaving. I'm not going back.
Right.
I am leaving. And I did.
You did. So how did you survive in Egypt?
I stayed. I have an uncle, not like a direct uncle, but yes. So I stayed there with him for a while, and after that, I start work. I worked.
You didn't obviously. There's no social security benefits for Sudanese.
Nothing
in Egypt.
There's nothing.
Nothing. No. So you worked. What type of? Can I ask what type of work?
Yes, I did a lot of babysitter.
Babysitter.
Yes.
Right. So it's not factory work.
No.
Or agricultural work, babysitting. No, so people you knew or?
No. They were all Egyptian. I actually worked with really famous people.
Well, tell us about a few of them. You may as well.
I did, yes. I worked with like actress, you know, looked after their children. And they have this thing, you know, I think it's all like Arab countries. They have, you know, if you look good and,
yes.
you know, like your shape is good and things.
Yes,
so
yes.
They employ you. It's for them as like a pride, you know.
That's right. Yeah. You know, look at my employer.
Look at her, you know.
I mean, I'm sure Joe will understand this because in Italy we have the same concept.
Yes.
It's called la bella figura, the beautiful figure.
Mm.
You know, but it's not the figure. It's the it's how you radiate to the community.
Yes.
How you present yourself.
Yes.
Exactly.
So they saw this young 14-year-old.
Yeah.
She's suitable to babysit our kids.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Did you get paid anything?
I did. I did. I did get paid, and I used to be one of those who... So there are two kind of work. So you come and you leave, and there is this work you actually can stay there.
That's right.
So you leave after a week.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm like, I don't want to go and come back, so I used to stay and leave after a week, and come back. So I'll have like a day
off,
and I come back the next day.
How difficult is that for somebody in your position?
Very hard. It was even, it was very hard for me to do the babysitting at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It was all new to me,
mm-hmm.
my age and first time doing it in a totally different country, but I need
the money
to survive,
well.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I did. I moved from one place to another. I think it took me like maybe two jobs to actually, like, yes, this is, I settled. Yes, it was a bit hard, but... always when you find good people, you settle.
Right.
Yes.
So how long did you stay in Egypt for?
I remember probably three years.
3 years. So now you're 16. Yes. What happens next? I mean,
I came here.
But how did you get here?
I just went to the UN.
Right. UN.
Yes.
What, as an asylum seeker? Or?
As a refugee.
As a refugee. Right.
Yes.
So you went to the UN. And what were they like?
They were good, actually.
Mm.
You know, I think I had a very good experience when I was there.
Yeah.
And I think when you go there and you actually honest.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't have lies around and things.
Yes,
so you
yes.
go there and you tell your exact story.
Story. Yeah.
You know, so whatever they ask. The answer is there, you know.
Yeah. Mm, you don't have to make it up.
Yes, you don't have to make it up, and you don't have to look and, oh, what did I say last time and things.
Mm.
So I think it went good.
Right. Went good. So was it a number of interviews, was it? Or did
yes,
you,
it was a number of interviews.
Right.
And, yeah, and they call you, and I think they used to send, you come and they give you like a number, and you come, you check your name, I think, on the board or something
right,
like that.
Right. So when did you find out that you were going to come to Australia?
I just went, I think the first or the second interview, if I can remember, I came and I saw my name on the board.
Right.
And I'm like, wow. I couldn't believe it, actually, because I was young.
Yeah.
But I'm like, hey.
No, the name's on the board.
My name is there, so I'm going.
To Australia.
To Australia.
Did you know anything about Australia?
Nothing.
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 Not even about kangaroos, wombats, nothing.
No, I think we did have photos and like papers that will give it to you.
Yeah.
But at that time, no, we were just thinking, we are going, that's it.
You're going, you're leaving.
You didn't think
you were going to Austria?
No.
No. All right. That's a long journey from Cairo to Australia. How many of you were there? Just you?
No, there were other people, but I can't remember a lot of you, but there were other people.
Right.
Normally people, they don't come to Australia as many as they used to go to, like America. Or Australia always takes like a small amount.
Small
of people.
Number, yeah.
Yeah, there's always a small number. So.
Right. Did you know any English at that stage?
No. Nothing.
Nothing.
Well, I loved English. So I used to, you know, say when I was in Sudan, I would practice a few words, you know, just to just show off, you know, myself.
Yes.
But it wasn't like something that like a study or anything. I would just catch words.
Right.
But when I came here, it was like a totally different English.
Yes.
I'm like, what? Well, I didn't know anything, but it's still like I haven't heard like nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah.
We'll get to that. Now, was this your first plane flight?
Yes.
What did you think when you got on the plane?
I was scared. Mm. I was scared and afraid of coming to a totally different country, and I had a lot of thought.
Yeah.
But I was positive that my life will change, you know, and that's the only reason.
Yeah. Where did you disembark? Sydney, Melbourne, Perth?
No, we came straight away to Melbourne.
To Melbourne.
Yeah. So. And I think we stayed in, I think, Coburg.
Mm.
This was the first place, yeah.
So the department was looking after you at this stage?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and it was very cold. I'm like, my God, what is going to be cold?
Well, I'm always interested in people's reaction who've come here when they get off the plane and they get out and they get out of the airport. I assume it was a little community bus they put you on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did you think of? Was it daylight or dark? Or?
No, it was dark.
It was
and
dark.
And there was a lot of lights. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
You know? And when we went to like a small house, and it was beautiful. It was clean and everything. Yeah. And they did look after us, but I was so cold. I'm like, oh, my goodness. And the next day, I think that's when I think a social worker, somebody came
and
they only went to the bank at Centrelink and did all of those stuff.
Yeah.
But I was like freezing,
right.
You know. People were talking in English, and I'm like, oh, my God, I will never learn this language.
Right.
Like, they were so quick and fast.
Yeah.
But I was happy.
Right.
I was, yeah.
Did your mother know that you're in Australia?
At the beginning when I was there, I told them I'm going. They're like, there is no way. Where is this anyway?
Right.
I'm like, I don't know, but I'm going.
I've
never been there before, but I'm going.
Going. Right.
And my mom was like, you know, you need to come back. But for me, it wasn't. Like, there was no choice for me to actually go back. So I said no.
You'd make that decision when you were 13.
Absolutely.
I mean, you put your life in danger as a 13-year-old girl. Very difficult. I don't think people realize how much courage you need.
Yes.
Extraordinary amount of courage and extraordinary amount of strength.
Absolutely.
Which you showed as a young woman.
Absolutely.
Well, a young girl, really.
Yeah.
So, how did your life change when you came to Australia? Did you go to English classes?
I did.
Right.
I went to English classes, but I think I picked up really quick, you know, because it was something that I liked to do. It was a language that I want to speak and I want to learn. And I picked up, and I remember they put me, I think it was a beginner, and within, I think like weeks, they moved me to the next level, you know, and after that they moved straight away to the next. I think it was more me speaking,
right?
You know, and understanding maybe not much at the writing, but it was more as me speaking and understanding and yeah.
How did you cope with the different, radically different culture?
It was new for me, a lot of things.
Right.
But I was open to learn, and right. I was open to take whatever that suits me and whatever that I was able to learn.
Yep.
So that was my mindset.
Right.
You know, a lot of things were different. A lot of things were a bit hard for me, and I came to know after.
Mm.
But I was open-minded.
Yeah, you didn't want to go back, obviously.
No.
and you needed to, you know, understand the society you were in.
Yes.
So when did you start work in Australia?
I did a few things, like years ago.
Yep.
But like work, I think it's probably seven, 8 years ago.
So, but you said you did a few things.
What
type of
things? Yes, it was more because I did not study as much.
Right.
You know, I went through a hard time as well when I came here with my divorce and everything. So that's what.
Excuse me. I'm a bit confused here. Divorce? I didn't know you got married.
Now you're divorced. This is a different story.
Yeah.
But for 15 years, so I didn't do as much.
So you were basically
I was
a housewife.
A housewife and raising my children.
How many children?
I've got four.
Four.
Yes.
Oh, and then you had the divorce.
Yes.
And then so you found yourself in your mother's situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I had to start working and I had to, you know, basically enter the community and know how to, you know, navigate through and try to understand a lot of things.
Right.
So,
yeah, very difficult. Obviously. So for 15 years, you were what, a suburban housewife?
Very hard.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how old were the children when you divorced?
They were all young.
Right.
My youngest one, he's 15 now.
15, right.
But they were all very young. They were all very young.
Well, I assume the difference was there was a little bit of social security support here in Australia.
It was, yes. Mm. It's much better. It's very hard within our community, actually, to go through this and to have that mindset and to be young and to go through this by yourself.
Yes.
It wasn't really a good experience, but
because you've got no family here, have you? Apart from your children,
no one.
And how did you look? I don't know how to put this. How did you find the community? You divorced. That's it.
No. Yeah. That's very sad.
It is
that the community. They will isolate you completely.
Right.
So I think the isolation is the hardest thing for a divorced woman to go through within our community.
Right.
Because even though a lot of them, they go through a lot, but they stay, you know, because, you know, they wanna keep that mask.
Yes.
You know,
they don't want
to be pointed as a divorced woman,
especially if you've got family, and that's the big difference. You didn't have to please a family.
Yes,
you didn't have to stay in a unhappy relationship,
absolutely,
because to please your family,
and to hold everything, and you have the mentality of you have to hold this family together.
Yes.
You're not going anywhere,
right?
But you get to the point like you can't.
So did you do any education after the divorce?
Yes, that's when I started.
Right, that's when. Look, it's 4:30. Yes. Look, it's 4:30. This is Radical Australia. Joe, the music coordinator, has stepped in to do the production. He's a wonderful human being. I say that publicly, but privately it's a different
I'm taking a deep breath, Joe. Yeah. That's all right.
We're chatting. We don't interview. We're chatting with Suad Rezek, who's been very kind, opening up about her life and how difficult things can be for people. Now, before I go on with the education, has religion played an important part in your life?
Yes.
Why is that?
Yes. Look, religion as a religion is totally, well, we can say it's a bit different than what people understand.
Right, well, good.
And I came to realize this and I opened my mind a bit mm-hmm. to actually have that freedom of thinking.
Right.
Because normally when you grow up, they're like very religious, you know.
Family, yes.
Family. Mm. And you know, and all the imams and things.
Yes.
And you have everything.
Right.
For you to come to a country like Australia,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they still give you the same idea of the religion and thing, you have to think by right. yourself and like, right. okay, is this actually, you want to follow this or you want to actually think and you have your own ideas and you think like, okay, I'm not going to follow this, right. but I know this is the right thing to do,
right.
you know. So, yes.
So what are the pillars of your religious belief? What have you put your hat on, as we say? What are the important things for you?
To believe that there is God. Mm. This is a belief for me.
Right.
That there is God and God created all human beings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, I believe that God is merciful. Mm. And I believe that God did not put me here to make me suffer.
Yeah.
You know, and especially as a woman, what religious told us, a lot of things that I used to believe.
Right.
But after going through my own, you know, experience with my life,
yes.
I came to realize like, no, I don't think God wants me to suffer.
No.
You know, I'm free and God wants me to live free.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the step to actually live free. Right. So that's what I did.
And did you find that education was the mechanism by which to gain that freedom?
Yes. Mm. Education and just knowledge, and you just think as a person.
Right.
You know?
You don't. Yeah, well, that's the trouble. I mean, I'm an atheist now, but I used to be a Catholic, Roman Catholic. And you'd go to church, and I'm old enough, I'm sure Joe doesn't remember, because we're from the same cultural background. And they'd have and it would be in Latin.
Mm.
And we wouldn't be encouraged to read the Bible because it means they've got no, you know, the imams and the priests and the rabbis don't have any control over you.
Yeah.
Because you start thinking independently.
Yeah.
Getting back, so what type of education did you do?
I started with community services.
Right.
This was my first
Is that a course, is it?
That's a course, yes.
Right, yeah.
That was a college course. So I did that. And after that, I did counselling.
Right.
So it's like a diploma. So I did that as well. And what else I did? I think that's the only two. But I did a lot of stuff within the community, you know, leaderships and all of those stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, just going back to the education, how difficult was it for a single mum with four children to do that, to do the diploma and to do the counselling and the community service work?
During the time I was doing the community services, I actually did criminology.
Criminology. Oh, I like that.
I did.
Joe, watch out.
I did not finish.
Watch out. She's done criminology. We're both in trouble. You realise that? She's picked us. Yeah.
She must have access to our images.
I did not finish it, though. It was great. You know, I enjoyed it, but it was a bit hard where I was going through a lot at the same time.
Yeah, it was a bit.
During the time that I was doing the community services, mm-hmm. that's when I was actually having a hard time with my ex.
Right,
and
right.
everything just came at the same time.
Time, right.
I managed, but it was very hard, honestly, but I managed.
Right. Why did you give up criminology?
That's one of the, you know, when you are actually in a relationship with someone that will put you down all the time.
Right, I understand.
You know?
Yes.
And you're even doing it from home, but you still that the concert, you know?
Yeah.
Talking to you and putting you down and thing. And at that time, I was still with the mindset, I want to keep this family.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I just give it up. I'm like, oh, you know what? If this is going to make him upset, I'm just going to give it up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Which
mm-hmm.
is, I regret it now. Mm-hmm. But I did for the sake of to keep everything.
If your youngest is 15, you'll be able to do it again soon.
Yes.
And we'll have to watch out. You realize that. Criminology. Well, we've had criminals in here, ex-criminals. But I don't think we've had a criminologist just in here,
but there is justice, isn't there, Joe?
Of course there's justice. Just us. It's just us.
Just us, yeah.
Right. So did this education lead to anything, any work?
Not really.
Not really. This is something I find very important in immigrant communities. It doesn't matter whether you're Sudanese, whether you're from the African continent, the Middle East. True. It doesn't matter where you come from.
Yeah.
You can do all this work and then nobody will give you a job.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
I did it, the community services, couldn't find a job. So I did counselling as well, couldn't find a job.
Mm.
I think the only thing that put me out there a bit that people know me when my book came out.
Book. This is like the divorce. I know nothing about the book.
Oh, yeah.
Did you bring the book?
Oh, it's in the car.
It's just in the car. Well, tell us, your book came out.
Yeah, I think that's when.
All right, hang on. No. Don't rush. We've got plenty of time. What made you write a book?
I wanted to help people.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to put my story in a book.
Right.
Because the culture that I came from, and what I found here, and the person that I became, and what I found from the community, it was a lot.
Right.
So I decided, you know, I need to put it in a book.
Because that's right, you know.
Yeah.
You die, and people forget within a few years that you exist. True. You've put it in a book.
I put it in
a book. What's it called?
The Silent Voice of Millions.
That's a brilliant title. The Silent Voice of Millions.
Yes.
And is it in English and Arabic?
It's in English.
Are you going to get it published in Arabic?
Yes, this is what I've been thinking about for the past few years, but hopefully it will. Yeah.
Okay. And did you get a publisher or did you self-publish?
Self-publish.
Well, no, there's nothing wrong with self-publishing because publishers only publish things that's going to make money, not that actually educate people.
Yeah.
So how did people become aware of your book?
I think I spoke about my book a lot on social media.
Right.
During the time that I was writing the book.
We're not talking to an influencer.
Maybe.
Maybe, right.
So social media was one of the things that I spoke about my book.
Yes.
And I have a lot of friends that it was in Victoria University. So they invited me. So I spoke about my book. And I think here I spoke about my book, I think twice.
Yes.
And, So
what year was it published?
I think now it's probably 6 years.
Could you give us just a rough idea what it's about? Is it about your personal experiences?
Yes, it's more about my, a bit of my childhood and other stories. So during the time that I was writing the book, because it was in my mind, maybe it's just only me going through this difficult time.
Mm.
But I got the idea of I need to go and ask other women as well to see if it's actually what I'm going through, their other women are going through. So I interviewed a lot of women from different background.
Right.
And surprisingly, those women, they were just waiting for someone to speak on their behalf.
Yes.
And they're like, oh my God, you came and we want to share our story.
Right.
So I shared my story and I think probably about 4 or 5 of different women's stories,
right,
what they've been through and family violence and all of those stuff.
So what's it called again?
The Silent Voice of Millions.
And how do people can access that?
It's in Amazon.
It's in Amazon, yes.
Or they can actually call me directly. I do have the hard copy.
But how do they do that? Have you got a website or anything?
Not now, but
Facebook page?
I do have a Facebook page.
Are you happy to give your Facebook address?
Yes, Swad Rijik. Yes, Swad Altayib Rijik. Yes.
Could you please spell that?
So it's my first name, S U A D.
Yeah.
And they will just put Rijik, R-E-J-K. And it'll
no dots, nothing?
No.
Just put that
yes,
and it'll come up.
It will come up, yeah.
Not at
they will
something.
See me with a white scarf. So.
With a white scarf.
Yeah. The same picture.
Is this because you wore white at primary school?
Maybe that's the reason.
Is there any significance to a white scarf?
They will, not really.
No.
Yeah.
Mm.
No.
Right. And how was this? This would have caused waves in Australia.
It did.
Especially.
It did.
Yeah. And how did that affect you?
First, I was happy that the book was out.
Mm.
But before I published the book, I got like a lot of calls
right.
that actually asking me not to.
Mm-hmm.
As a Muslim woman, mm. I spoke about a lot of truth in the mm-hmm. book
right.
and a lot of hidden things behind closed doors.
Mm.
And like the Muslim communities, they may look at it like you are actually putting us out there.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
yes. So a lot of
you're
people do want it. Exactly. Yeah. They don't want it to come out. Right. I've got a few calls like, please yeah. don't, because mm. there's okay. no, yeah. But I did.
Mm.
I did. And, but it actually opened doors for me because mm. I was able to speak about women problem, and I was able to speak about family violence, and I was able to be, you know, called to, you know, places to speak and actually to speak mm. about women. Mm. So,
what type of places?
Well, I worked as an electorate officer for the parliament probably about 1 year.
Right.
That opened a door for me, and this is the book actually put me there.
Put you there, yeah.
Yes, and at the same time, I did like a whole year of like a community radio.
Right.
So the book, when they realized the book, they're like, okay, you can actually come and do a program.
What station was that?
It was, I think, I can't remember.
Couldn't have been that important because she can't remember. Obviously, no, it wasn't 3CR, we know that.
No, it wasn't. But
3PBS?
No,
3RRR?
No, it's a talk. You were talking.
Probably, yes.
Yes, so it would have been possibly the
It was
SBS.
More of the community. Something.
Yeah, it's the
I
one.
Did one with SBS, though, yes. about family violence
yes.
as well.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but I did like a whole program.
Was the studios in Brunswick?
No, it wasn't a studio. It was more as I'm from home, but they're like in different place. So I would record, I would send it to them.
Right.
And they will say.
Okay,
so it just opened doors for me, and people started inviting me to speak about women and things
right.
and my experience.
Right.
And
right. Have you been forgiven by your community?
No.
That's a direct answer.
No.
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 So you're still isolated.
I'm still isolated, but I got support from a lot of women
mm-hmm.
and men who actually, they think I attack them a lot,
mm-hmm.
but men who is, they actually understand where I'm coming from.
Yes.
They do support me even if they don't support me publicly.
Yes.
They do come and actually say, yes, actually, whatever that you're saying is actually the truth.
Mm.
So I'm like, why? So listen then.
So do you think what you've done can change lives?
Absolutely.
Can you give some examples?
For example, I will get a lot of phone calls from women.
Right.
They will say to me, you know, when we see you on social media or mm. when you post a video or something, we'll get the courage.
Right.
Because there were a lot of women, they felt like they've been trapped.
Yes.
And it's hard for them to speak, and sometimes the language is a barrier.
Yes.
And when I went out and I started talking about my problems and what other women are going through, they're like, you actually speaking my mind.
Yeah.
This is exactly what I'm going through. And I start explaining, like, you know, the way you can actually deal with it and the way that you can actually, there is a lot of help and all of those things. And women, and a lot of women will think, okay, I'm in that situation, but I don't know how to get out of it.
Yes, yes.
But when they hear and listen to me, they're like, okay, she's done it. You know, I think I can do it myself as well.
So do you think the institutions that are set up currently cater more to European women and Australian women than actually migrant women?
I think.
Mm.
I think, yeah.
And why do you think that's so?
Well, it's actually, I think we need our voice to be heard.
Right.
You know. And even though this is not, you know, men are saying different things, migrant men are saying
yes.
different things, because they just have a different mindset.
Yes.
And what I always say, just adapt. Don't take everything, but the mindset of our men is really hard to change.
Mm.
That's why we're facing a lot of problems. So we just need our voice to be heard.
Right.
You know. Yeah.
Well, what you describe is not unusual. Every immigrant wave, and we've had immigrant waves in this country, you know, since the Second World War. There's been different groups that have come, and it's the same.
It's the same, isn't
because
it?
People still think they're from the old country.
Yes.
Look, I mean, I've got the ridiculous situation that I speak a dialect in Italian, right?
Mm.
And I thought that was Italian. Until I went to Italy and found out it was a dialect. And this is what I'm saying. People have got the same cultural practices, the same language as they did when they left 50 years ago, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
How do you think children from these relationships are coping?
Depends on the, say, for example, on the mother.
Yeah.
So I believe if the mother, this is what I always tell them, if you work on yourself, you educated yourself, and you've been strong mentally, because it's all like a mental thing, you will be able to raise your children properly in this country.
Right.
100%.
Right.
Okay? There are a lot of, you know, kids get influenced a lot out.
Yes. Yep.
But I think it starts with home.
Mm.
So once you are in the situation of a divorce, separation, this it comes with a lot of consequences. And if the kids are there, but if you stood up and you've been like really strong and you eliminate all of those distractions, I think mothers will be able to actually raise their kids properly in this country. So migrant mothers, yeah.
So you think the fact is, although it's a social security system, makes a difference. You don't have to rely on family.
It doesn't help as much, but it does, absolutely.
Well, it pays for the necessities. That's all absolutely. It does. It pays for the necessities, and that's the key.
Yeah.
Like when your mother found herself as a widow, as a young widow with five children,
absolutely.
She only had the family to rely on.
Absolutely.
Nothing else.
Yeah.
At least a social security system.
It's great.
Provides a little, it's not about being grateful, it provides us a net. Yeah. See, people talk about the dole and welfare. I don't use those words. I use social security system.
Yeah.
It works both ways.
Absolutely.
We give you money so you don't kill us because you've got no money. it's a social security system. It's not about being grateful. It's about providing security for the whole community.
Yeah.
If you leave a whole section of the population with no financial support, they have to turn to crime to survive. And so people forget it's a two-way street. You look after people who can't, for a variety of reasons, find themselves in a position where they can't look after themselves.
Yeah.
You give a little bit of financial support.
Yes.
You actually save the community from all of the stress that occurs. And,
and
that's why I really hate words like welfare and dole. Yeah. And it's just,
it's
denigrating.
Yeah.
We're all part of the same community.
True.
Whether we like it or not.
True.
We're not, you know. All right.
Yeah.
Now, you said you're an influencer. What does that mean?
If I can say.
Are you on Instagram?
I am on Instagram, TikTok, everything.
Everything, Instagram, TikTok.
Yes.
All right.
It goes with the same name, yes.
The same name.
Yeah.
Mm. All right. You haven't had any physical confrontations because of what you're doing?
I don't associate as much with my community.
Right.
First of all, because I'm like busy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do get, and I find out like a lot of men will, and the women will come actually and tell me like, my husband said, don't follow her.
Right.
And the problem is he will be following you. Don't follow her and don't listen. And they will say, we created like a different account.
Right.
So he doesn't know that we created, but so we can still watch you.
Right.
And the problem is they will be the first one to come and watch me.
Right.
Why are you watching?
So how often would you post?
For the past like a few years, I used to do like a lot of lives on Facebook, but I had a period of time that I stopped, but now I'm going back to it. So I try to post maybe every day, like a video, maybe 10 minute video or something. If I have something to say, I always have things to say, but I'll go live on TikTok twice a week.
What do you think about the growing animosity towards migrants and refugees in this country? Because it is becoming a real significant issue when you've got 40% of people voting for a party like Divided Nation, which its policies divide the community. I mean, do you feel that the community is beginning to feel this? That
absolutely. And I think there is a fear, you know, what's coming next.
Yes.
And this fear itself, it's going to cause problem later on. Because I think a lot of us actually adopt, and a lot of us have our children here, and this is home. for us and for our children, and nobody thinking like, oh, I'm going back to live there, But when something like this happened, it creates fears, you know, even for our children that were born here.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So there is fear within the community.
And you think it's growing?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
it is causing divisions. Look, I'm nearly 75 and I've never seen it. I've seen it bad, but I've never seen it this bad, where they're actually able to mobilise on a political campaign.
Yeah.
And to a large degree, it's due to the fact that the neoliberal ideology has delivered nothing to people. And they turn around and they say, oh, it's the migrants' fault, it's the refugees' fault, it's the gays' fault, it's everybody else's fault. But not the people who actually own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Yeah, I know it sounds boring, but that's the reality. You know, they want instant messiahs.
Yes.
It's very sad that you're telling me that in these communities that fear is growing.
It is growing. You can feel it. You can feel it among our youngsters. You can feel it, you know. I think it's actually getting worse.
It is getting worse because it's now acceptable.
Yeah.
It is acceptable to say all Muslims are criminals. It's acceptable to say that a whole group of people, because of their skin colour, is no good.
Yeah.
It wasn't acceptable, but now it's part and parcel of conversation. And to me, and I think to a large degree, it's people like you that have caused it, your influences from the other side. So you need to fight it because what I love about you is the fact that you're not anonymous.
I'm not.
Most of the haters on the net are anonymous.
Yeah.
They're anonymous.
Nothing to hide.
No, but I'm just saying you've got the courage
to say, the courage.
These are my ideas.
Absolutely.
This is what's happening in our community.
Absolutely.
And that's different to many people on the net who hide.
Yeah, true.
They hide because, you know. But the trouble is more and more of them are not hiding anymore because I think it's acceptable to actually denigrate sections of our community because you are part of our community. I assume you've taken out Australian citizenship?
I did.
Yes, very good.
I did.
Very good. And all the kids have too,
yes,
I see.
Yes, they were up on
So how many did you take to Khartoum in 2019?
I think...
How many of the kids came with you?
We all went.
Oh, the whole family?
Yeah. So me and my four children.
That would have been a difficult journey.
Oh, it was very hard. But we need it because we don't go back as much.
Right.
It's very hard and it's so expensive and it takes about 5-6 years to go back for maybe 2 months.
Right. And what did the kids think about it?
That wasn't their first time, but every time they go, they like it. The first two weeks.
Yes.
And after that, they're like, it's boring, let's go back. It's boring, we're tired, and like we're getting sick, and we have to go back. And like, it's boring, we don't want to stay here. It's different to them.
Yeah.
It's totally different.
Because Khartoum Airport's still closed, isn't it?
Until now, yes.
Yeah, so you'd have to go to, the Red Sea?
And then
catch a bus or something across?
Yes, it's what they do now.
So. Yeah, very hard, very hard.
It is.
And how's your mother coping?
Well, I just spoke to her 2 days ago.
Mm.
At the beginning, it was very hard for her, especially losing my brother at this time. It was really, really hard. And I felt for her because this is the second one,
she lost, which is hard.
No
mother or father should see their children die before them.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But she's coping. Mm. She's coping well.
Mm.
Of course, the movement from Khartoum to a different city, she didn't want to do it at the beginning. She's like, oh, I'm staying here. I'm not going anywhere. So we had to like really beg and force and everything. And my brother has to talk to her. So she agreed when she knew it's getting dangerous.
Yeah.
So she left. But as soon as everything just went back, she's like, I'm going back.
Mm. And was the house ransacked? Was it damaged?
It's a lot damaged.
Yeah.
A lot damaged. And they took everything.
Yes.
So to rebuild, you know, it's hard, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
So what are your plans for the future?
Maybe working, giving more to my community.
Right.
Being out there and hopefully somebody will hear my voice.
Right.
And I will find a job through what I do best, helping the community and actually to work within the family violence sector. Mm. I think I'll bring a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah. I think you had a voluntary position with Broadmeadows City Council? Or no, Humes Council.
Marybeck City Council.
Marybeck. Yes. And what did that entail?
This is more about actually just being that the middle person between the council and the community.
Right.
So, yeah, for us, it's very hard to know exactly what's going on there.
Yeah.
So me being there, I get all the information and I can actually, you know, tell the community, like, right, you know, this is happening and that happening. And it's in my own, you know, simple language that they will understand.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Now, I've only got a few minutes left. You may not believe it. The chat's nearly over. Look, in case people want to contact you, they're interested in what you're doing, can you give us a few sites they can go to? Your Instagram, TikTok, whatever?
So they can actually go more into my Facebook.
Right.
That is SUAD.
Yep.
And REJK.
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 SAU. That's a very simple Arabic name.
Swad, yes.
You haven't got five names. You haven't got any middle names you haven't told us about. No.
I do have, but if they go with that, it will just come straight away.
It comes out. Swad Rezak.
Yes, Swad Rezak.
S-U-A-D-R-E-Z-I-K.
R-E-J-K.
Oh, R-E-J-K.
Yes.
Oh, God, I get it wrong all the time. R-E-J-K. No, it's good. Look, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. And I suggest very strongly you come along to the 50th anniversary party for 3CR.
Thank you.
It's on the 4th of July. It's a Saturday. Bring the kids. Family-friendly thing. And it starts at 11 a.m. Wow. It's the Collingwood Town Hall.
Okay.
It goes to 4 p.m. You can meet a lot of the affiliate groups that are associated with Community Radio 3CR.
And
maybe at some stage you should turn your mind to getting a program here on Community Radio 3CR. Oh, that's what I'm saying. I think you would be welcome.
Thank you.
With your background, you'd be more than welcome. And I suggest that a good way is, if any of the staff are still left, I'll introduce you to a few of them on the way out, and you can have a chat to them.
Beautiful. Yeah.
There's
so
plenty
much.
Of space to have a language program here.
Yeah.
If you want to speak, if you want to speak in your language, but you can do bilingual as well too. So no problem.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I look as an affiliate, the Anglican Experience Institute is an affiliate. Radical Australia is a 3CR program, but as an affiliate, we would be happy to support your nomination if you decide you want to go forward.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
My pleasure. I think you're a very, I know this is a terrible word, a great role model, you know, and you've shown a lot of courage.
Thank you.
And I wish you and your family and your children all the best for the future in this country.
Thank you so much.
And I think together we will be able to look down the haters in our society.
Absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Joe.
For having me.
This program will be podcast.
eventually, later on today, perhaps, or later on this week. But yeah, you've been listening to Radical Australia, folks, on 3CR Community Radio, 855 on the radio dial. And you can listen back to other episodes of Radical Australia at the 3CR website, 3cr.org.au/Radical Australia, where this one will be up eventually as well. So thanks very much. Very informative. And exactly, a role model. Stay tuned now for Brainwaves, folks.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.